Let's call this meeting of the Joint Armed Services Committee to order. It is 1 p.m. on Wednesday, July 28, 2021. Before we begin, I want to thank Nancy Hemingway, the Senate Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Marissa Truitt and Vanessa Head from the Juneau and Anchorage LIOs, who make sure we have sound. This time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. And present today, Senator Hall, if you could give me a brief assist. I think the tradition is that I introduce members of the House and introduce members of the Senate. And so I will introduce members of the House who are present and online, then introduce members of the Senate, and then I'll introduce the public members who are present. From the House are Representative Nelson, Representative Tarr, and myself, Representative Clayton.
And I will turn it over to Senator Schauer if he'd care to introduce the Senator's present.
Well, thank you, Senator Holland. Let's see who we have. We have Senator Reinbold with us. We have Senator Holland, myself, Senator Schauer. And in front of us, we have Senator Kawasaki online. And did you introduce the other members? You got it. Thank you.
And public members online, we have Randy Benes and Tim Jones are both calling in online. And present today, we also have Robert Dole, although we'd like to call him Bob Dole, and George Michaelis, both public members. And so with that, we have a forum to conduct business. And then Chief Representative Sponholz has also joined us. So we still have a forum to conduct business. The COVID-19 pandemic and the special sessions delayed the meeting until now, so I'm happy that we're meeting and continuing the work of the Joint Armed Services Committee. I'd like to give an opportunity for members of the committee to introduce themselves on the record and give some background on your district and any information you would like to share about your service. And I'll actually ask the public members to speak first since we have legislators so often. Mr. Dole, if you want to give us a brief introduction.
Yes, Co-Chair. Hi, I'm Bob Dole. I was nominated by the Municipality of Anchorage. In my other duties, I serve as the Building Official Development Services Director and temporarily the MassCare. We oversee the MassCare effort at the Sullivan Arena and the other places. Before that, I retired as a colonel out of the Air National Guard after 18 years of Army time and then another 14 of Air Force. I was a slow learner getting over to the Air Force and look forward to learning from our group just developments in this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Michaelis.
Thank you, sir. My name is George Michaelis. I've been in Alaska about 37 years now. I came up here originally in the military with the Army, served two tours up here, retired as a full colonel, and was a city manager here for 12 years and assistant superintendent at the school district for operations for 9 years. Currently, I have a consulting company and do work for the school district.
Thank you very much. And then online, Randy Benes, if you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thank you. I'm Randy Banez. On the civilian side, I work for Defense Logistics Agency here on J-Bear. I was in the military, came up here to Alaska in 1992, and then joined the Guard in 94 and retired out of the Guard in 2012. And that's pretty much it. Oh, I was recommended by the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the civilian member.
Thank you very much. And last of the civilian members, Tim Jones, Mr. Jones, if you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background.
Yes, thank you. I represent Fairbanks, North Star Borough, Interior Alaska. I came to Fairbanks in 2008 with the Army. My last assignment was as garrison commander at Fort Wainwright, where I served for 3 years until 2011. I retired as a colonel, spent 27 years in the Army, and have lived in Fairbanks since my retirement.
Thank you. And just in terms of legislators, and for simplicity, I'll start on my right and go all the way over to the left. Representative Sponholz.
All right. Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. It's nice to see everybody. I represent House District 16 in East Anchorage, and I am J-Bear adjacent, and am the daughter and daughter-in-law of military veterans, and so for all of these reasons, I'm pretty interested in the work of the Joint Armed Services Committee, and this will be my third year serving on the committee.
Representative Nelson.
Perfect. Thank you. First off, I want to say I'm great to grateful to be here and also grateful to hear so much Army representation, especially among on the civilian side. I represent District 15, which is Northeast Anchorage, as well as the Air Force site of J-Bear. On my military side, I am an officer in the Alaska Army National Guard. I've been serving that as a commissioned officer for the past 3 years. I'm a first lieutenant and a 74 Alpha, which is a C-Burn officer.
Thank you. And Senator Shaw, I'll let you go second to last because you're co-chair.
Sounds good.
Senator Holland.
Senator Holland, Senate District N. I joined the Coast Guard Reserves in 1991. I retired out of the Coast Guard Reserves for 30 years, February 1st of this year. Thus, my flat top has gone away and the long hair is showing up. And I deployed to Bahrain, Kuwait. I was chief of the boats in Gitmo in 2007. And Coast Guard's a great place to be.
Representative Tarr.
Hi, I'm Representative Garen Tarr. I represent House District 19, which is Mountain View, Russian Jack, and Airport Heights. We're adjacent to J-Bear and have worked with them closely on a number of issues, including the runway relocation, other housing issues, neighborhood safety issues. We're lucky that they attend some of our community council meetings so we can have that strong relationship. Also have a lot of military service in my family and thank everybody who served here on the committee. Previously served as the co-chair, and so it's great to see our public members still participating that were appointed during that time. And I do want to just mention, in case people have to go, we had previously been a co-sponsor of the Alaska Defense Forum. The first one took place pre-COVID, and the next one is happening on August 4th in Fairbanks. So I just wanted to get that quick announcement in there if folks hadn't heard, and you can look online for Alaska Defense Forum for more information. Thank you.
Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. My family came here in 1960. Before I was born, my father ended up being the site manager at Clear Force Air Force Station, which is now a space station, which I'm extremely excited about. My husband's family as well. He was an orthopedic surgeon in the Air Force in the 50s, and his family's been here for decades. J-Bear is in, a good part of J-Bear is in my district, District G. I do want to say last week I was able to go to the Major General Eiffel, the change of command, which was just amazing. It was a beautiful ceremony at the U.S. Army AK last week, so that was wonderful. I've served on Military and Veterans Affairs and JASC, I believe, most of the 9 years that I've been elected. And I've got several family connections from the Navy, the Army, the Air Force. I'm not going to get into those. And I was previously a co-chair of this committee, so it's a privilege to be here.
Thank you, Senator Schauer.
Thank you. So Mike Schauer, represent District E. That's the north side of the Massapequa Borough, all the way out to Valdez, Glen Allen, Delta Junction. I do have a couple bases currently. There's the Ballistic Missile Defense Base and several training facilities, including Fort Wainwright off to the side there. So have a lot of representation with that currently. I put on the uniform first time in the Air Force in 1986, took it off in 2010, decided that 24 years of government service wasn't enough punishment, so to jump back into state service. So here I am. Makes sense that I'm inside this group. But this is an important committee, and it's more of an informational one for us. But knowing what's happening on the military side is very important because this is an entirely heavily populated military state with both veterans as well as active duty. And as anybody that's paying attention has seen, the interest in the Arctic is only getting stronger, especially with countries like China, that you would think is not an Arctic-involved nation, but they are. And we need to be heavily involved and understand with our DoD partners what's coming next, because I'm here to tell you, deep water ports, interest in the Arctic as far as exploration, other things are very important to this state, as well as defense of the nation. So we are in a very critical place. And so with that being said, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, whatever you want to call it, I'm ready to get started.
Thank you, Senator Schauer, Co-Chair. And I'm Matt Klayman. I represent House District 21. I come from a family with a lot of years in military service, although I did not serve. One of the areas I do try to return favors as a trumpet player. For years I've been playing taps at veterans' funerals and happy to continue to do that whenever I get a call. I agree with all the comments. This is a very important committee that we really need to be aware of a lot of the issues as they affect our state and stay well informed. So our first order of business today is the Decoration of Honor Medallions. I want to note also President Kim Skipper. She's staff to Representative Nelson, and she's been a JASC committee aide for many years over the years here. So I want to recognize that she has been helping my office as we've been working for a meeting today.
Mr. Chairman, was someone on the phone? Was Senator Kawasaki on the phone?
We did recognize
him. Oh, you did. Okay.
And he is, by all signs, still on the phone.
Okay.
And anyway, the first order of business, Decoration of Honor Medallions. You've got a fact sheet that should be in front of you.
Great.
Oh, that's true. Senator, Representative Tarr, you're right. Senator Kawasaki, I neglected calling you to introduce yourself. If you want to please introduce yourself, and with my apologies, Representative Tarr was correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Tarr. Just really briefly, I represent the city of Fairbanks and Fort Wainwright, adjacent to it in the Senate. As Mike mentioned, there's a huge veteran population, a lot of active duty across the state who we're blessed to have. I've served on the Joint Armed Services Committee for a lot of the time that I've been in the legislature, and I served as its co-chair along with Senator Costello in 2016. So just glad to be here, glad to see a lot of familiar faces.
All right, that gets us back to the Decoration of Honor. In fact, you should have that in front of you. And we've got a small PowerPoint presentation. I think Emma, are you prepared to give us a short discussion? So I'm going to have my staff, Emma, give a description of the topics here, and then we can take it up for questions and discussion. And I see Kim Skipper also coming up.
Hi, for the record, Emma Potter, staff to Representative Clayman.
Kim Skipper, staff to Representative Nelson.
Okay, we can get started here. So the Decoration of Honor is an award that is given to fallen service members. It was created in 2007 by HB 244, and the Joint Armed Services Committee was given the responsibility of making sure that these awards are designed and given to the proper next of kin. We're here today to talk about the storage of these medallions. I think Kim might have some background on that she can share.
So this is Kim Skipper, staff to Representative Nelson, through the chair. The Eagle River office, when everything was housed out in Eagle River for several years, because Representative Nancy Dahlstrom was the co-chair back when the 2007 Decoration of Honor was created. And during that time, the original presentation for the Decoration of Honor went back to the Korean War. So they created Decoration of Honor medallions. They're a nice birch box. The beautiful medallion that looks like what you're seeing in the presentation here. And they're engraved with each member's name who was a casualty in war. The member that the award is after is either from Alaska or served from a duty station from Alaska. So they had to be J. Bear, Wainwright, wherever. If they got killed in action, they were awarded the medal. If they were born in Alaska but served out of North Carolina, they were awarded the medal. So back in 2009 was the first year they had the huge Decoration of Honor ceremony, and they made the medals for every member that was in the original, I think it was in 2008 or 2009 when they did a resolution awarding the Decoration of Honor. And at that time, I believe, I can't remember the numbers, you have
I can go to that slide also.
Yeah. So the SDR 18 that you see there from 2008 goes back to the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the early wars of the Gulf War in 1991 and the early war when we started in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're made metals, so they're in storage with a person's name on them. Some of those medals have been given out, but as you can see, the still in possession right here where it says 67, those are still in the safe or in a storage area with the member's name on it. Either some of those people from the Vietnam War did not want the medals at all and don't care about them just because of the situation of the Vietnam War, or we could not find the member's family next of kin. Subsequent to that, you can see HDR 7 in 2009, there were six members had fallen, and there's nothing in possession. We've been able to give them all out. 2011, there was HDR 7. We still have 30 in possession and 30 fallen soldiers, so they're still sitting in storage. And it's time-consuming because if we get the list from the Army on the casualties, you have to go through, and it has a designated next of kin, sometimes a mother, sometimes a wife. Oftentimes, these young soldiers were 20, 21. They married young. The wife may have left and doesn't want to have anything to do with it. They were pretty heartbroken after the loss of their husband. So a lot of those family members can't be found now. So it's a time-consuming process to go through and identify the next of kin that you can give it to and get that to the family. And most of them don't live here. They all live somewhere in the lower 48 or then maybe in other countries. I think we even have one in another country. And as you can see, SDR 20 from 2012, there's 25 that were casualties and 25 still remain. I took over in 2013 as a the staff to Representative Sadler, and HDR 5 was done. I had nine of them. I was able to locate all nine family members and get those on to the family members. Subsequent to that, after 2018, I don't remember who was in charge then, but I helped those staff out. SDR 14 had three. We still have those. I just picked them up yesterday from the Mint. The Alaska Mint is who puts the medals together. And they engrave them once I give them the names of the soldiers. And so I picked those up. I'll be able to disseminate those because I have the list of, I think I can get two of them disseminated. The third one, I'll have to find the Mexican because the wife has disappeared. And HCR 11 was I went and worked with Senator Reback last year. He passed away in 2018. So no one did it in 2019. So I picked it up and I told Senator Reback. Gabriel Condi is the one who passed away in 2020 or 2018. So I have his now. I picked up yesterday. So as you can see, the balances here, the rest of them are in storage that have to be somehow dealt with. And I don't know how we want to do that, but that's going to be the question, I think, I bring it up all the time because I think these are important and should be given to the family members, rightfully so. I'll give a little story. A couple years ago, back probably 2015, I got a call from Legifairs and said, hey, I've got this lady that's looking for some information on the Decoration of Honor. She thinks her son was awarded one. And they told her to call me. So I took her number and I called her back, and she happened to be in New York or something. And she was all still distraught about the loss of her son, so she kept Googling her son. And she came across the Decoration of Honor that he was awarded. So our bill was obviously online, and she found it. And so I called her, got her information, sent it off. She goes, hey, I may have another lady. I said, seriously? I said, give me her information. I'll call her. So it was another contact. But they were all part of the Gold Star family connection that they were able to help me trace to another person. So it takes Inspector Clouseau kind of work to get this thing done. But we were able to track her down and get another medal off. So I was able to, you know, go backtrack and peel some off from the years before, but not very many, because it takes one person to sit there and just time-consuming to go through the whole list and go back through. But just wanted to give a little history on how that all came about and why there's so many in storage. There are also a bunch of blank ones in storage. So when they did do the original request to the Mint to make the medallions, there's a many boxes in there that are with the medallions, but not put together yet and not assigned to a soldier. So we don't have to purchase any more if there's any casualties in the future. We have plenty in storage to use to have the Mint take care of those.
And do you have an estimate of how many, I'll call them unassembled medallions, are in storage?
Through the chair, I do not. Mike Berenda, I think, could probably tell us. I used to have a list. If I go through my thing, I may be able to get that number for you.
Mr. Chair, question.
Representative Bond,
thank you. Ms. Skipper, I see that in 2011 and 2012, there were 30 and 25, respectively, fallen service members who were honored, and we have all of those still in possession. Do you know if there was an effort made to try to track down their descendants?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, I believe there was some active look into that. I wasn't working for the legislature back then, but I was familiar with one of the staff, Representative Dahlstrom at the time, and I know they were making some efforts to look through that. A lot of times we had a hard time getting the list from the military, because technically this is supposed to go through the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for them to provide the information to the legislature. But a lot of times they wouldn't give it to us because they say this is not a military medal, this is a legislative medal, so we're not required to give you that next of kin information. So I'll have to look through my files to see if I even have that 2011 and 2012 information.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Ms. Skipper, has there been any conversations with, say, either state museums or different city museums around Alaska about housing the medals that we have in storage right now?
Through the chair, Representative Nelson, no, just because I think the JASC committee needs to identify if this is what we want to do with them. I can't remember if it was last year in 2020 or 2019, when I was either with Senator Birch or Senator Rivak. I got a call from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, a military person over there, a young lady called me and wanted information about this. And so she was doing some project over there, because I thought, well, that would be an ideal place if they had a hall over there for, you know, recognizing soldiers and whatnot, be a great place to put something. And I don't know if she moved on to a different location or what happened to that project, but they didn't inquiry, and I've given her massive amount of information so they can at least know from their side who was given the honor and the award.
I think we should follow. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should be exploring that option. I mean, having it just in storage is nice, but we have 122 that we could be temporarily loading out to different museums to give remembrance and honor to these fallen soldiers.
I'm going to jump on that because they stole my thunder, but it's okay because that's an important one. I was going to ask this very question about displaying the non-possessed ones and what we should do. So we should obviously take it up. Then we should discuss how we want to do that, as just mentioned. Another thing, you know, you can think like the wall at Langley, you know, or other places where they have them in one central location might be better from a cost perspective, just as an idea. But in a good museum or someplace where they're kind of inside, protected, but that people can see them, that we would still obviously have access if we were to find another person that would want it, because you don't want to give up on the effort. But I think that putting them somewhere where they would be displayed and remembered is probably better than to leave them, you know, just in a storeroom somewhere. Because I was getting those one of my questions, where do we have them stored at? I think it would be a good thing to do. I would also add that from a cost perspective, one of the things we've struggled with is, you know, naming bridges and other things when there's not a good mechanism to do so. We're spending, you know, taxpayer dollar to do that, and that upsets some people, and I personally don't like to do it either, but there are a lot of organizations that want to do it from volunteer perspective, from their own funding, et cetera. We just have to allow that to happen. So I think that's something the committee might consider, is asking either a veteran group or somebody else if they would like to take that on as a task and find a place that we can display those that's not going to cost money, but still would be appropriate, and we can give the remembrance and the honor, you know, for those that have fallen. So just a thought, Mr. Chairman, as we go through it. And then just one last question is just, are we up to date? And it looks like we are, but are we up to date with where we stand? So I'd I would suggest the committee take that up as a discussion topic when it's appropriate.
And I'll just note as chair, because one of the things that was brought to our attention, particularly when you look at the SCR 18, the folks from Vietnam and the Korean War, that when you've got in rough numbers about a third that families just for one reason or another are not claiming medallions, it seems unlikely at this point that they're going to claim the medallion. So it seems to me that we shouldn't keep storing them indefinitely. We should figure out what to do with them. And I don't think that's a decision for today, but I think it's something we should try to solve as a committee in the next meeting or two. Further thoughts from other committee members? So, Ms. Skipper, go ahead if you had comments.
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, some of them don't even know they're there because the contact has not been made with the next of kin. So I think the more recent ones in 2011 and 2012, if I had an extra few minutes of time, I always try to go back through the list and I spend my time on the Google searching, trying to look for people and trying to find new obituaries to try to find other names to lead me down a path to locate somebody. But lately, the legislative sessions have obviously been going longer than we all probably would like, but not to be disparaging or anything. But there's leaves a little time for a staffer who's working on other things to try to dedicate, you know, inordinate amount of time to go through at least to the 2011 and 2012 time frame. I think we can probably find those probably a lot easier than the ones from 2008 that go back to the Korean War through the Vietnam War. I have a list that I got from Representative Dahlstrom's staff at the time, Susan Wallen, may she rest in peace, who bestowed all this information on me. So I've kind of been the keeper of this just so I can, this is important to me. You know, my husband's retired Air Force and I don't want this fall to get dropped. And, so I've kind of been keeping up with it, and I have a list that one of the contractors that they hired a couple years back to go through to identify who's been contacted, who hasn't, if they've found a friend or whatever. So I have that list here too, and I think I've given it to Emma just so we can keep it. And I'm fixing to make, I made a memory stick that I want to give to the library, the LAA library, so that can go on file. So whenever I retire and get old and retire, somebody will be able to go back to a point and find all this information as well and have a history of it too.
Mr. Chairman. And
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. I know Rep. Carr had a question as well or a comment. I think that one of the things we could do with this is give an option to family members. If they know that we find a good permanent home and let somebody do this, we could even perhaps in our solution ask if, say, a veteran organization would want to take responsibility for it. Perhaps we could do that if that makes sense, or at least once we provide those and say you own it, store, you know, display it, do your thing, but given the option for those families that don't want it or some certain amount of time, we could hand it over and let them take it as well, and then that way it would be one thing that we wouldn't have to have staff or somebody else that's doing. We could have a direct organization responsible for it.
Ms. Skipper.
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, I was in California, the capital in Sacramento, a couple years ago for a legislative meeting, and they have a similar, not a decoration on a medal like this, but they have a hall that they put in their state capital. Of course, their capital is enormous, and to honor the fallen soldiers. And so I forgot what the name, I've got it written at home somewhere, but I happened to notice it, and I thought, oh, that's a good idea for something maybe we can do in our own capital, I don't know, but or find a room or something that that we can, you know, at the same time without spending any additional money, house it within, but display. So we can honor the soldiers properly. But other states have done something similar. It's just where how they do it and display it.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was just going to say we worked quite a bit during my co-chairmanship with Ms. Skipper on this, and I think as far as it got was getting it all consolidated here to Anchorage. And so, you know, I just have that kind of perspective of it being a little bit staff intensive. But if we're going to move towards doing something with the ones we have still in possession, I guess I just hope that we somehow incorporate the ones that have also been claimed by family members, because we wouldn't want to have it sort of appear as if that were the only list of fallen soldiers, right? Those would be the ones that we weren't able to find the families for, but somehow recognize each of the individual soldiers in, you know, some kind of maybe document or something that would accompany the display so that they are all honored. I guess it would just be my thought on that.
I'll, through the chair, Rep. Carter, your point, I think that's important because I can tell you from making the phone call to the parent has probably been one of the hardest things. I'm going to cry. I'm going to choke up right now just doing this. And I think Senator Reinbold will remember being in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Committee when I had to do the bill for Dan to Representative Sadler a few years ago. It was very heart-wrenching and difficult. And Senator Kelly doing it on the floor, reading the names of the fallen is, it's traumatic. And calling the families is really traumatic. And I end up being with the mothers usually on the phone. And it's, that pain never goes away. It's their child and no matter how old they are. And, anyway, I think it's something that you have to do is remember them all.
Further comments, thoughts from committee members? Senator Reinbold?
Thank you. Just briefly, there's 122 still in possession. I do remember having them in the Negro office, and now they're obviously in Anchorage. But I'm not sure if there would be volunteers, staff volunteers or us volunteers, or if we can divide these up so that one person isn't have the burden of it. I don't know if the co-chairs want to distribute or do some sort of research, but I do think it's something that possibly we should prioritize because 25 of 25 in 2012, as I think Representative Tarr or Representative Reinbold pointed out, I mean, it's just things that we should be able to find some of them. So, anyway.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold, I agree. I think that one of the things we can do, and they're a little bit better placed and fairly well motivated. And I agree with the comment from Rep. Carr as well. We want to make sure this is a plaque or something that would show everybody, but these are the ones we can't find or whatever it happens to be. I suggest we may want to go down the path of asking a veteran organization first, only because this is kind of what they do. And legislation, we tend to get distracted, politics, other things. They are focused on that, laser focused at times. So it might be, maybe, if the committee so decides, that we want to ask for outside help because they're really good at it. So I think that maybe that's what we want to do, even several of them. So for what it's worth.
I would just know a couple of things, and then actually, Ms. Skipper, go ahead, and then I'll make my comment.
Through the chair, sorry.
That's okay. You bring more experience to this than many of us.
As y'all keep talking, something else comes to mind. Last year, we just to let you know on these, there's one per soldier. So a lot of times there'll be a family, mother and father, and I think most people, you know, they lose a child and they end up getting divorced. The family gets divorced and they can't, you know, handle the situation. So the medal goes to the next of kin, usually is the mom on the Army's document or the military's document. And then they get divorced and then I get a phone call from the dad, or I get a phone call, somebody got remarried and they took the medal and won't give it to me. Can you give us another medal? The answer is no. You only get one medal per family. And, you know, and I've had to help a lady out of Montana who was helping another lady whose family got the Declaration of Honor. I think I still have her contact information because she said she would help us. If she can help us locate a few more people, that would be great. But she was helping somebody in court, believe it or not. I had to prepare a list saying, here's the document, here's the list, here's the bill, this is what we're doing, and only one can get it, and this is the reason why. We're not, you know, it's an award, it's a medallion. We just can't keep recreating them. And then what we've done for the other family members, like if there's brothers and sisters in the family, up in, I think, Senator Rivas' office, I brought all these things from the Eagle River office and I kept them where they wouldn't get lost, is a line of duty coin that was created back in the day when Speaker Pete Kopp was around. And they were given those coins to fallen state troopers or fallen police officers that fell in the line of duty in Alaska. Well, we've got tons of those coins. And it doesn't specify that you were a police officer who said line of duty. So, and they're beautiful coins, and they're in a little nice wooden box. And so we've been using those coins. So if there's the mother gets the Decoration of Honor, the coin will go to, there's two or three siblings and a father, then they get the coins instead of the actual Decoration of Honor. So we have plenty of those too.
Well, I think part of the challenge that I think we have is what do you do with the still in possession coins? Because whether it's 100 or 200 or 300 that don't have names on them, sounds like we have more than enough medallions for the future, as hopefully there aren't any fallen soldiers, but to the extent there are, we have enough for quite a while. But in terms of particularly the 2008 list, if you put them in one place, then you're picking some and excluding others, and I don't think anyone wants that. I think the size of these makes it so that I'm not sure we could, if we were to create something in the Capitol or somewhere else to recognize and have a full list, like you might see at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial or other places where I've listed veterans that have died. In those situations, you're just putting the names, and so that might be an option, and you know, whether museums might or might not take them, at some point that becomes a decision that the museum has to make. I can't really force them to do anything, but I think Senator Schauer's suggestion of seeing whether there might be veterans. And Senator Schauer, do you know of veterans organizations off the top of that might be?
I do, and I can reach out to them, and we'll ask the question and see what they say, and we'll let them kind of chew on the problem, and then I can get back to the committee at the next meeting, and we'll discuss and see if they have options and what they would like to do. But I know this is the kind of thing that many of them are dedicated to, and they're often looking for something that they can do that helps, especially with the fallen. So I'll work on that, and I'll get back to the committee.
Any other ideas in terms of committee members and the next steps? Obviously not a decision today, but I would like to keep this on the agenda because I think when you see how long he's still in possession, we haven't figured out what to do. I think we kind of owe it both to ourselves as a legislature, but also these law and service members to figure out what we're going to have. The last thing I think any of us wants is to be sitting in legislative storage. We didn't create these to just keep them in our storage units. Any other thoughts from committee members?
Just one. There is a Arctic. Sorry, I went a little too fast there. I'm speaking too quick. I apologize. They had Senator Sullivan is working on an Arctic Warfare Center that is hopefully will be funded and put up here in Alaska. It's still obviously a few years in the future. However, that might be the perfect place for something like this because the space will be there. It will fit with service and, of course, fallen service members. So that will be something I will ask his office as well just based on the space of it and what we do. It would still be nice, I think, to have a veteran organization that helps finding and talking to families. That's part of what they do as well. Outside of legislative influence, we just create it, give it to them, let them run with it. But I will ask that because that building may be the kind of place that we can actually set that up from the very beginning. So I'll investigate that with his office as well.
Mr.
Chairman.
Oh, Senator, Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say, I think if I'm remembering the schedule of things, that the annual report from the JAS committee is due on the off year, and so I think your office will be preparing that. And one of the things that you're supposed to do through that report is review the enabling statutes and kind of review that sort of like the necessity for the committee. And I'm just thinking, you know, for our long-term planning, this might be something for consideration in those recommendations. And Ms. Skipper can probably help me out here, but if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure I'm correct about this, because when we were co-sponsors of the Alaska Defense Forum, we had a very limited budget to work with. But previously, the JAS committee had a little more substantial budget and even a staff person dedicated for that. And I think, you know, over time that's changed. And that, I think, is just one of the things that adds to the challenge of the workload for this, because as Ms. Skipper was saying, that, you know, you could spend several days tracking people down and making phone calls and then trying to deliver the medal. So I just wanted to get that out there, thinking that might be due. It's already coming on August here, like in just a few months. So as a committee, that might be something we want to think about for our long-term plan, and then it could be incorporated into those recommendations. And if we wanted to make a change in the next legislative session, then, you know, we'd have the opportunity to do that.
We do have a report due in January before the next session, and that's Representative Farr's correct. I think one of the things Ms. Skipper reminded me of is that part of the frustration in working this is that sometimes the adjutant general, even though the statute says they're supposed to provide us a report every December, not always consistent getting us that report, so that sometimes makes our work a little more challenging. Ms. Skipper.
And through the chair, speaking about the reports, if there was something I would change in the statute on that, it would be that. Because they're due, like you said, on the off year, so it's in the middle of a legislative cycle. So technically we're taking 2021 and 2020 as a report that's going in on 2022. So if it was me, it would have been, and I don't know the rationale behind it. There may have been something logical that has not been imparted to me yet, but I can't see it. So if it was me, I would move it from 21 to 20, a legislative session, because mm-hmm. you're going to have Representative Klayman and Senator Schauer as the co-chair for 21 and then 22, and then you turn the report in to the new legislature on the on 2023. Am I making Gary, Representative Parr understands what I'm talking about, because a lot of times the prior, if we're responsible for creating the report, a prior member that had the year before may not be coming back. Mm-hmm. So trying to cobble the report together from a year that wasn't, that you weren't in charge of, is kind of, even though you may have been part of the committee and on it, you understand where I'm going.
Oh, I understand completely.
Okay.
Ms. Heber, there's actually logic to both. One would be that if you have it due on in the in-between year when you've had a session, then you have a year for that legislature to figure it out and realize what they need to do by the January of the second year of the session. And if you do it on the beginning of the session, then you depend on people who may or may not be coming back the next session to have actually organized enough to prepare a report in the last days of that particular session. So at some level, it's similar, but there's actually challenges both directions. One solution might be to have a report due every year, and then there's more. Then you just realize that just something has to get done every year, and I recognize, and I think we all can recognize the challenges of that little quirk. Representative Spahn.
Yeah, I think it's possible that we might just, make a minor change to when the report is due. If we had the report due by December 31st, it would still be within, at the end of a two-year legislature. That would sort of be a clear deadline for the current chair to deliver a work product, which then the incoming chair would be able to pick up and say, oh, this is what was done over the last 2 years. I appreciate Ms. Skipper's constructive feedback for us as we're thinking about how to modernize this, and you certainly don't want it to come right to the very end, but if we honored sort of the two-year legislature, but then, moved it up, say, 1 month so that we could be guaranteed it was in hand in time for the new legislature to be sworn in, I think that would be very useful.
Okay. Anything else from members of the committee on this topic? We will keep this on the agenda. Our offices will communicate and see about potential veteran organizations. And if you have other thoughts, please let my office know and we'll incorporate that. And our second order of business today is some brief discussion of future meetings. We've scheduled now for August 25th from 10 to noon a tour of the Joint Armed Services headquarters at JBEAR. They've made it available for us from 10 to noon. That'll be a tour, and I don't believe it's not scheduled as an actual meeting of the committee, right? But that is going to be a tour so we can see more what's going on in JBEAR. General Sachs has also suggested that we consider visits to some of the operations in other parts of the state so we can learn more kind of on the ground of what's going on. The areas he suggested we look at include Bethel, Kodiak, the Anchorage Joint Forces Headquarters, Southeast Alaska, as well as Fairbanks. And I do think to the extent we're looking at that, we want to make sure that that's something consistent with ongoing operations and we're not incurring any additional costs for the committee to see some of the activities going on. No specific plans right now, but we will plan to contact all your offices in the weeks ahead to look at a few more details and see about availability and get any feedback. And unless anybody else on the committee has anything else to add, that's all we have on the agenda for today.
Go ahead.
Representative Carter.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, okay, so that's Wednesday, August 25th, and if we're in Juneau as expected for special session, is the idea then we would come back to do that tour here in Anchorage?
I guess the best I can say is that given all the uncertainties around special session and special session timing, when we convene, how long we stay in session.
Okay.
I guess the best I can say is let's stay tuned. I'm not particularly inclined to say everybody fly back from Juneau for the day. I'm actually pretty inclined to say don't fly back from Juneau for today. We'll just continue. But I also think it's quite possible that we might not be in special session by that point in time, and so there would be no reason to change anything. And I guess the other potential is that I know during the first special session I was sometimes in Juneau and sometimes not in Juneau, and I think that's true of other members of the legislature. And so, again, I kind of leave some flexibility. It's we're not meeting, so to some extent, if there's a reasonable number of people that will be present, I think some point there's some benefit in just going through and seeing things when we can, because it might be another 2 months.
Okay.
But I'm very aware it's very uncertain.
Okay. Okay.
Special session.
Just wanted to double check. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you all are aware there's some discussion that the governor may or may not delay the start of the special session, but
I can talk to that.
Answer to that, then.
I can tell you what I think I know.
Your next step.
So it sounds like, based on the working group, because I've kind of been shanghaied in that the last couple of weeks, that as of today, what I have heard, but it's not, at least I haven't seen it formally announced yet, that the governor has made a decision working with the four caucuses inside the legislature, and it sounds like it's going to slip to the middle of the month of August. So it seemed pretty certain, but I don't have it announced yet. Like I said, unless somebody can look on, see if it's come out, somewhere around 16 August. Is what it appears to be, so it may or may not be conflict. I think you've planned it, go with it, you roll, and do what you can do. And it's not going to hurt people's feelings if they don't have to give tours for the day if we can't show up for some reason. It's, you know, we'd like to make it happen, but obviously it's, you know, you just do what we have to do, and we'll make the call. So I think that's what's going to happen. The other part I wanted to mention was the discussion that we had. As we look at places around the state, that it would make sense for legislative members and staff to potentially go see the operations so that we understand what's taking place, where we might have things that we need to do, especially infrastructure-wise or other things that the legislature would actually be involved in, because our role here is pretty limited. I think, and I was laughing when we talked about, like, the Joint Armed Services Committee. Like, so if this was the federal Congress, well, they show up because it's funding. It's very different, right? We're not really funding things here, so it's a bit different, more informational, but we do have a role. And there's things like deep water ports and other things that we need to be involved in very directly as a state that the military is also very interested in, not just the guard side, but federal active duty as well. When we look at this is my final point, I kind of jumped off track, is there is the option potentially with the guard to look at some of those flights that they do for training. So if we do that and coordinate with them, I think there's some things we can do and do some hopping around the state. That's not going to cost any more money. We can take advantage of that transportation, get on a C-17 ride, for example, and go and see some of these things, and it's just part of their operational training. They do it anyway. So I think we've got some good options where we can expose the appropriate folks to other operations of what we should be thinking about, but we can also do it while saving money. In other words, not costing more money. So keep that in mind.
Senator Tarr, you and I talked about that, and I think you and I are completely in agreement that if it's a training flight that's going anyway, we're very receptive to going and seeing places, but if it suddenly starts becoming, for lack of a better word, a junket, I don't think anybody on the committee wants to schedule new junkets that are already in the works.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes, Mr. Fajardo.
Do we have planned an opportunity for the senior members of the various services up here to come and give kind of an update on where they are, what they see in the future, and also what assistance we may be able to give to them when it comes to preparing for the new Arctic strategy that each service will be involved in? I think that that's an area that this committee could probably play a pretty key role in, But we need to know what they need, number one, and we need to know where they're going. And so I'm just asking the question, are we going to plant something like that?
And Mr. Michaelis, that's actually a very good question. That actually is kind of in the plan for the fall, is to identify a session where we can actually have, at least those are available. Sometimes you've got a number of folks in charge and they may not all be able to appear, but that's part of the target plan for the fall, is to have a meeting of the committee in which we will get a presentation from members of the armed forces and their leadership.
Thank you, sir.
And I do recognize in that kind of scheduling dynamics, the odds that we get all three services here at the same time, that may be a little bit optimistic. I think we can get a pretty good
Yes, sir. Or their Sunday representative, you know, the number two person or so.
Okay. Senator Reinbold, and then Representative Tarr.
Thank you, and I want to echo the comments of Mr. Michaelis. I did really, really miss the update this year a lot, and I would love to have some sort of a national security briefing. I always think that the state legislature just doesn't get enough. If you watch military news, it's very unsettling. There's a lot going on, and I feel like we as state legislators need to be aware, and it just blows my mind that we do not get more information on national security issues, and I really would like to make that a priority of some sorts. In addition, as Mr. Piketa said, the Arctic, I think it's critical. What's going on in Hawaii, there just seems to be a lot more activity with Russia and China, also protection of our resources, and even food security, you know, if for any reason things happen, a food shortage or whatever, I think we should not let that off of our radar. I think it's very important. I heard we have like 3 days of food, something ridiculous amount. And when I asked Parnell what his plan was for food security, he said we're going to go catch cod out in the waters. And I'm like, that just didn't sound very rational or reasonable to me. And I really think we need to ensure that Alaskans, I think it is our responsibility to ensure if something happens that we're ready. Thank you.
And thank you, Senator Reinbold. When I met with General Sachs a few weeks ago, he was specific about how when state of emergencies are declared, the National Guard is one of the first that's responding when food emergencies are part of it. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say, when we planned that update, they recommended that we give 6 months advance notice. And so we actually started right about now to schedule the update for the legislative session. And so I don't know if we'll have better luck at this time, but just thinking of our public members as well, because if we want folks to travel to Juneau, so maybe we want to try to pick the sort of like late January, early February date with the hope that we would be able to get the top leadership and be able to fit into their very busy schedules.
We'll definitely look into that. I do know that I think it was actually on House Armed Services Committee, we actually did get a presentation about a lot of strategic updates as one of the So I think that may be that the individual bodies were doing a better job of getting the updates than
committee. Thank you. So in response to that, I just want folks to know it's not that the primary co-chair for this year, because the Senate will take it next year, was not doing this. This was just a matter of COVID mostly, because there was the question and asked, and many of them were like, can't make it, don't want to make it. There was a lot of travel. So the thought normally is to have that exact update every year. So we should, and more is better if we can get to it, but they're busy. So I just want people to understand it wasn't that we changed how we're doing business. There was other things that kind of got in the way, which is why Representative Klain was kind of moved that to the fall target as we discussed it. But to Senator Reinbold's point, and her and I discussed, and I told her a few times, I said, until I get nervous, she's not allowed to be nervous. So when I get nervous, then she can get nervous on what's happening. But for those of the reason that this is important, for example, and I'm done because of time, what Representative Klain said about the Guard being involved, very germane. However, a lot of people don't know that last May, when we had riots in Seattle and the ports, that we were within a few days of not having a ship show up. And like she said, there's 3 to 4 days of food on the shelf, and there's panic and there's issues. Guards aware, but they get overwhelmed very quickly. And we were asking the question of the tag I directly was in my office coordinator, said there's military ships that are logistics ships that are parked in various places. And we were asking the question, can we get one of those, two of those close by, in case it happens, because we're the one place that is logistically challenged as a state where you can't just put semi-trucks on the highway and get them there if they get in trouble. So things like that are important for us to understand, because our role becomes communication, especially with the citizenry in our districts, and telling them, hey, folks, it's going to be fine, and here's why. We're thinking about it. We have a plan. If you tell people that's 90% of the battle. So I only say these things that it is important, and we do have a plan for it, discussing it. It's not perfect with the other things that have gotten in our way, but we absolutely need to be doing this. And we are an arbiter of information, and that's one of our jobs on this committee is to do that. So I appreciate the latitude to speak there, but thank you.
All right. Well, with that, we are going to adjourn for the day for no other reason than Labor and Commerce has this room in 3 minutes. So so we're going to adjourn for the day. The time is now 1:56 p.m., and we're adjourned.